to the permit, make sure we can have it. Saying that she had raised it at the SCAC meeting, and there were some concerns about it, and I don't know, I mean, I didn't know if they were there.
They're opposed.
Right.
But see, my concern is this. The problem with those kinds of deliberations, somebody hands them a paper out there and says, what do you think? And they look at it and they say, no.
Right.
Well, that's not very productive.
Right. And you know what I found, and see, I let Susie take that because she had been to that meeting.
Yeah, yeah,
she
knows.
And she was fully supportive. We vetted it with the Ag Liaison Advisory Board and had pre-meetings with them, too, with the Ag Task Force.
Sure.
And modified that original model that we had.
Which is
then came in, and they were all okay with it. And Susie thought that it was okay, it was a done deal, but she had the background.
Here's the problem. The modifications were, you did an excellent job of dealing with ag concerns. I thought that was good. The problem we face is it would basically criminalize everybody else that has outdoor pets.
Well, no.
Now, in my, I got to tell you, in my community, we have coyotes inside the urban reserve line. We have raccoons on occasion. We have lots of possums. There's just a lot of stuff that would come under that heading. And the problem is, it says, if I put anything out that's an attractive, like an exciting, well, dog food, cat food, those are attractive. I mean,
right. And the idea is, I mean, yes, it does criminalize that if it creates a problem if they're attracting wildlife and
whatever. I have a neighbor that feeds hordes of ground squirrels. I mean, the populations are way beyond any kind of natural selectivity. You can't get enough hawks there to keep pretty clear.
Your coyotes, your bobcats, your
and has over 100 cats in her home.
Can that be incorporated in my comment?
Which that is well, it's not strictly it should be. The problem is they used to be licensed.
As long as you're not breeding, either issue.
No, and here's the good thing is you can tell the partner any time of day or night, say, here's a bat, your kitten's underneath the somebody's house. She will crawl under the door. She'll get scratched up. She's a skinny little thing. She drags them all out. She gets them all spayed at her expense. She gets all the shots at her expense. And she gets them at her expense. She does everything right except after spaying, she doesn't release them.
Or find a home for them. Does she try to do that?
Well, there's plenty of cats to go around. Oh, yeah. So she would be criminal. And obviously, there should be some better solution than what she's got. I agree. I just think that the ordinance, I think it's going to sweep up way too many people that are not doing the wrong thing, as it's written. And the argument is, well, this is a tool that we can use, but basically that just means we're not going to enforce it uniformly. We're just going to enforce it when we feel like
complaint driven.
Yeah. Which means that if you've got a nasty neighbor, you're in trouble. If you've got decent neighbors, you're not. And I don't think a law should set us up like that. Here's my suggestion.
Well, we'll talk. I'll give you a call and take her every email.
We need an ordinance. I think it should deal with intent. Intent to feed wildlife.
Yeah, but see, doing what you said, leaving pet food out.
No, but I don't intend.
Does, even if it's unintentional, it does attract wildlife that creates problems.
But I'm not luring those into my land. I mean, the fact that I have fruit trees in the backyard. That's what the possums come for.
Right.
It's hard to regulate intent, though, too.
Well, intent makes it a lot more difficult to do. But on the other hand, it gives fish and game people some very selective opportunities. They can come to somebody where there's a known problem. They can say, you're feeding these deer. And you need to stop doing it.
There's a few people that would just assume not provide more opportunity.
True. Anyway, I have forgotten.
Meeting we established him as the chairman of the subcommittee. So, and no vice chair or secretary was established. So, I just thought the suggestion to me, to your group, to maybe establish those two individuals for times like these, and maybe, you know, doing some notes and agendas for, you know, next meetings.
I read your note, and I thought you were saying that, you know, we would look at this RFP today.
Yeah, that was the only thing I knew.
And I think that's worth doing. Unfortunately, I printed mine out just before I came, so I don't have a list of suggestions. Anybody else have copies?
There's more copies up here. And I can just go through it. That's fine. There's just one change that's different from what I sent out, and I can point that out. It's pretty minor.
No, thank you.
I guess I'll just start off on the RFP, so. Just to recap, basically the flood control district got grant funding to look at an option for our excess state water allocation, and the option is looking at groundwater banking in county, in particular at the Paso Robles groundwater basin. So this request for proposal is going to be going out in order to do that feasibility study. That's just the background that I think you all know about. So the approach basically that I took to this RFP is, you know, we had this work scope already outlined in the grant agreement application. So basically I took that, you know, cut and paste, and expanded on it based on our discussions we've had in this group and any questions that came up that are relative to the goal of looking at feasibility, you know, the physical feasibility of banking water in the Paso Robles groundwater basin. So that was kind of the approach I took here. The first couple pages are all standard boilerplate RFP for county. I'd say the main meat of it starts under proposal format. The beginning just kind of outlines the format of the proposal that we'd like to see, and kind of our weight as far as when we look at it to decide who might be the best candidate.
Could I ask a question back on page 2?
Sure.
It talks about local proposer preference. Is local defined as county or North County, Paso Robles?
It's defined as county.
Yeah.
It is county.
It's a business license in the county or in the city.
Is that your intent to have it be county wide or more local than that?
That is a question that come up, whether we have to have this in here or not, that I still need to have answered, but it won't be advertised only in the county, that's for sure. And in fact, that's one of my questions maybe to you, or requests that if you have any consultants that you think might be good that you know about, that you want to get the word out to, that would be good to know.
Local is defined on page 2.
What's that?
Local.
Okay. Yeah, so that second paragraph under 1 and 2. A local resolution.
So, according, is it normal to publish these in the county that other people look for them?
Yeah, you know, it goes to our general services department to do the advertisement for, posted
so
on the internet.
Is the August 15th date too short?
The July?
14th? No, we have to have the stuff back by August 15th. Isn't that sort of a short date, short time frame?
About a month. I thought that was reasonable, and plus I have to keep it up with our, we have to have this done by January 2008, so I kind of wanted to make sure.
I'll wait for the next week.
I'm
sorry, these are simple. I don't know. I've seen it back again.
It's not.
Thanks.
Any more questions on the standard?
What are we asking about?
Oh, we're going over the RFP for.
Oh, right.
I was just kind of going through the approach and take questions and comments. Did you
well,
need a copy?
One thing I think I did put this in an email. The governance questions don't seem to be there. And I know that in some ways they're sort of secondary depending on the physical direction that's chosen and so on. But on the other hand, the physical direction that's chosen may be contingent on local people sensing that they have a voice in how the water is used, etc. So, what was the thought on where and how the governance questions would be handled, such as whether the county would have any representation on the CCWA board, or whether there would be, you know, what kind of communication would there be with the CCWA, the DWR, etc., etc.?
I'm not sure whether that question will be answered in this our this study. It might come out when identifying potential participants and agencies that might be interested in such a program. Kind of in the end of the final report stage, going over recommended steps for implementation. I'm anticipating that those kind of, just kind of identifying some of those issues. If, looking, okay, well, these physical places and methods might work. Mm-hmm. Well, the next steps, you're going to have to look at this and this for as far as actually implementing that program.
Let me make a suggestion, but it'll need a little wordsmithing so it doesn't get out of hand. On page 6, it says, given the basin's characteristics and physical locations, that the existing water infrastructure approach possible alternatives to be able to tank water in the basin. I think one of the things that we have talked about periodically too is that there might be places that could be banked outside of the basin, but within some proximity. Devil's Den, along the coastal branch.
Just one of the
ones was Mesa. There was another one at East of Colonial Passage.
This one only covers this arrow branch. It only covers the downstream groundwater basin. But if this group wanted to make that a priority, having a work effort associated with looking outside the county or in a different area, then you could.
Well, I'd be afraid to say it. Sort of generally outside the basin, because that kind of open-ended description can be very expensive. But if there were a few that were close by that could be identified, so that you could say in the basin and then name 1, 2, 3 or whatever they are, so that it wasn't so open-ended, it didn't get away, and I think it wouldn't add too much to the cost of this.
Such as along or near the alignment of the coastal branch, because the places I think we would want to investigate would have proximity.
Well, we have the resource that we have in order to go to this next step is our Paso Robles Groundwater Basin study. So that's the information we're hoping to spin off of. I guess you're saying not to go into technical, the way the basin operates. That these other basins along the way would maybe saying that they could suggest something else to look at?
The thing that the supervisor suggested to us was a little broader than that. They simply said, at that time they said there's 17,000 acre feet that's not being used. I realize it's less than that. What should we do with it? I mean, it was pretty much like that. I think not to explore a couple of those, which are fairly obvious, we'd end up with a report that wouldn't be complete to meet what we were tasked with doing. I don't think anybody ever said only explore what can be done in this particular basin. Now, your funding may have restricted it that way, but that's not what we asked for.
And there may be literature already created that can be reviewed. In other words, there may be studies on that side of the mountain similar to the study here that can simply be reviewed and not done.
Well, I'll take that comment into consideration. Well,
yeah, just share it with them. Obviously, if you made it too wide open, it would be very, very expensive. And then the other one in that same list of bullets, I can't count down, but it's like the fifth one up in the bottom. It says, who might participate and how would the program be paid for? A parallel question is, who might benefit and how might they be reasonably assessed?
Well, who might benefit is two bullets up.
Well, there are some people who benefit who would choose not to participate because they believe in the tooth fairy. They think they're going to get it for nothing. So, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you can identify a clear benefit, then I think there's maybe a reasonable way of asking about expenses.
Isn't this it's a planning grant, right? In other words, And why is it necessary to restrict it to pastoral adjacent? Because of the way you submitted the state.
We identified four specific plans that we wanted to do, and this was one of the four that we wanted to look at.
And you don't feel that there's any flexibility there?
Not really, not too much. But it was what we identified in that grant application.
Yeah, because I think, in my mind, it's an opportunity to get some broad information for the entire county water resource. If that could be snuck in there in some manner, why? For instance, evaluating the existing groundwater depressions and the incipient groundwater depressions in the county. Some of this nature would extend. Because as far as functioning, I think Shannon was a good example of what you're going to get into in terms of public involvement, and that is, what's in it for me? Well, in the groundwater depression, you can convince people that it's everybody's involved in this thing, and the object would be to access the water into those depressions. Well, does that necessarily mean that you're going to exclude those areas in the rest of the county to access this water? One way or the other, through transfers or agreements with other agencies and things like that. So, as far as recharge goes, and accomplishment, an institutional accomplishment, it's pretty important to have that. Communal or involvement of the locals in order to get there, even if it's just to allow you to measure what their wells, as we ran into out there in Chandler. So, anyhow.
Isn't this primarily physical ability to store water in the basin, what we're really doing.
Yeah.
We're actually looking at multiple basins because we have one basin and we said we're going to look at the physical constraints of that basin and decide whether or not we could actually store water in it. So that seems like a pretty full plate given the amount of money and the time frame we have.
Yeah. It's definitely, if we wanted to focus on something and reasonable that we thought the state would give us grant money for, but I think coming out of this group, it would be a good goal to have, you know, based on your discussions, maybe a priority of other things that you would, you know, recommend that staff look at.
Well,
do you think that would be a goal with your group?
I guess let's assume that we're going to assume strict limitation that we can't investigate anything outside the pastoral's groundwater basin, then what does the first bullet mean? What are the possible alternatives available to bank water in this basin? Are we simply going to investigate sites within the basin physically? My understanding is that a site would have to be fairly large.
It's sites and methods, because there's, you know, the different methods for banking groundwater. There's in lieu, and there's spreading basins, which is probably what you're referring to, having to have a lot of land. There's injection wells. So it would be looking at the basin, looking at different sites, looking at the different methods, and evaluating the costs and locations and everything with that. And that would be all, you know, part of that assessment and feasibility study of that.
And of course, that is almost inseparable from the question of the who might participate or who might benefit. In other words, are we talking about firming up the entitlement of downstream urban purveyors, or are we talking about overlying potential users? And the assumption,
I'm a little nervous about that, because I think you're looking at the overlying potential users paying for all this, and the real only benefits of the downstream real estate developers.
I'm hoping that this question will be answered in here and looking at the different.
You're back to the study is a physical review to see what can actually be stored and where.
That's true, but there's got to be a purpose for doing
all these policy type questions will derive from whatever we find. Mm-hmm. If you find that you can, then you're going to have policy questions like you're asking, who's going to pay and when and how and where is it going to be used. Mm-hmm. If you find out you can't, then you're probably going to be saying, where else might I look in this county to store water? So it seems to me that we're kind of going over the side here. What we really want to do is focus back on what this study is, a review of this basin to determine where, in fact, and if we can actually.
What some of us want to do. I mean, the end of the telescope I'm looking through is, I have not heard a clear statement of specific purpose for use of the 17,000 acre feet, or whatever the amount is, except, well, we didn't take it before, and it would be a shame to waste it, and people are paying on their property tax bills, even though it's fairly negligible, and so on and so on. I have not heard what specific user or user group has presented a proposed use for that 17,000 acre feet. And without having that information, discussing what's physically possible as a project, it's like a project without a specific purpose. Unless the purpose is just, well, let's not let this go to waste, somebody may need it someday. I mean, is that the purpose?
Courtney, I think the reason we deliberately did not ask those questions was because we don't even know if there's a physical solution available to us. And to spend a lot of effort, and by the way, stir up a lot of political heat over
exactly.
A whole bunch of proposals, and then to find out that you can't bank it, we would have wasted a lot of time and burned up a lot of political capital to turn out a solution. This was strictly designed as a physical solution to the water. I just thought that we were going to look at some other physical solutions, because this is only a subset, and maybe with the amount of money we're talking about, that's all we can do. Fine, if you come up with yes, here, here, and here in the basin, we can still look at the other sites if they're possibly better. If you say no, then we can stop looking at the basin, we can still look at those other sites to see if those are possible alternatives. But I don't think any of us started out by saying, we're going to build this new mega center between Shandon and Whitley Gardens, and here's where all the water's going, or whatever.
Maybe we didn't, but when we're interfacing with the Central Coast Water Authority, they are very sophisticated, slick players with a primarily urban audience. I mean, they just had a special meeting a couple of months ago to essentially assign water rights to a Delaware corporation that they can use anywhere in Santa Barbara County to meet the requirements of their cost to build to prove that they have a water supply. That's the kind of operation the CCWA board routinely engages in Santa Barbara County. If we're going to find a physical location to store 17,000 acre feet of water in this county, I certainly would want to know that we're going to have some kind of control over the purpose for which it's stored before anyone here starts to get assessed for or suffer the impacts from any such project. And we have no voice, zero voice, on the Central Coast Water Authority Board.
Well, the purpose of, you know, the idea behind the groundwater banking program would be to store water for times of drought or a period of need in order to extract it out again later. And part of the idea of some other examples of how it's working in other areas is that there's an amount of loss associated with it. And so that's kind of a payment to the other participants that are impacted by such a program. And so there's, you know, these are the types of things that are going to be explored in this in the different ways. And another way is an in-lieu program where maybe a rancher or a farm would take the surface water in lieu of the groundwater. So that would be another potential participant that may not even be the Central Coast Water Authority by themselves. So that's kind of some of those questions that I'm anticipating and looked at in this study.
And when you're saying loss to the downstream purveyor, which is actually then a physical gain to the overlying landowner?
Potentially, that's, you know, part of the study is to look at, you know, how fast that water is actually moving, whether it will be, you know, there, how long it would take before it went up to Monterey. So looking at that kind of physical, you know, the way the basin operates.
I think when she says loss, it doesn't imply a loss to whom. It just means if you put 1 gallon of water in the basin, can you extract 1 gallon out, or could you extract 0.9 gallons? Mm-hmm. You know? So the loss is to the basin. It's not a loss to the downstream user, or to an overlying user, or to Monterey. It's just a loss to the hydrologic system. Is that how you mean loss?
Yeah.
And that's how we speak of loss.
Yeah, definitely. And that's, you know, incorporated into the scope of work in the RFP too.
To refresh, the cost for this, or the grant for this, is $250,000, is that what I recall?
Mm-hmm.
Just for this study that you're asking for.
Right. And, you know, project management costs and that sort of thing to get it completed.
One of the things that I've, over the years, indicated that, yes, you have a groundwater model, but you do need to follow up on getting some positive observations as to the actual validity of that model. And I brought along a publication with me. I'm purging my files. I'm getting out of politics and tossing volumes and stuff away. And one of the things that this paper describes is the is a hydrologic cycle, and also it's fairly recent in terms of interpreting groundwater modeling and some of the subsequent measurements that can be taken associated with evaluating the, for instance, I think, as I remember, you found sublayers that you had some confinement in your, and you showed up in your model in order to develop it. And if you've got a confined aquifer, which is the predominant water source for the great production in the county in the basin here, for instance, are you going to really recharge that? Are you really going to recharge where the water is being depleted from? And so there's methods of getting at this. We've talked about this satellite interferometry, and that's mentioned, but there's also other tracer and other methods of getting at the age of the water and things like that, from which you're extracting, from the zones that you're extracting. So if you're extracting water that's thousands and thousands of years old, you're not really going to be able to recharge that portion of the basin. And so what's the, there should be the opportunity to go to the Geologic Survey, this particularly, this article was written by William Alley from the Geologic Survey of Virginia. And I think that should be written into this. In other words, selective, if indeed there is a possibility of drilling wells to sample the zones that are of interest in the basin, such that you could gather samples to evaluate just how effective you might expect your recharge to balance, to come into the balance of the basin. That should, in my mind, be part of the program. And so I brought these papers along for those who might be interested in this. But I think that's a further verifying the model could be justified by this program as an objective.
Maybe also not as a new program. I was just meaning that. Was it something I said?
No.
In the studies 1 and 2, phase 1 and 2 study, is there some of that kind of data already available?
Water quality, we have some perk tests, no. There's well logs are available, but to do, we don't even know where the sites are, so we don't know what information is there.
I do have a line in here that says run the computer model of the basin for the top alternatives identified to refine analysis and recommendations. So I think maybe at that point, if there was additional field work that needed to be done to get those studies.
Seems like that ought to be in the next part of the process.
Well, I think what Bill was talking about is important. I mean, it really is. It's different than what you're talking about. So, I mean, with the RFP and with what you're trying to accomplish, utilization of the model for, I think, for this level of investigation is fine, but
for site assessment, that's a little different.
For designing the.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it tells you nothing about site-specific functions.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Yeah.
And this, there are techniques here which would allow you, if you would do some accurate well construction, sampling waterfall. To get at the age of the water and indicate whether natural recharge is functioning in the area that you are evaluating.
Yeah, we've done that some of that in Los Osos. It is very interesting. It's just that the area is so broad, that we have to really pick our.
Well, but you're gonna, hopefully you're going to try to isolate potential recharge sites, right? And therefore, to evaluate whether they are going to perform will require that you know the geohydrology of those, that general, that specific site area.
Maybe one of the work products that could be requested in the RFP would be a detailed list of what would be required to, you know, assuming this study identifies a couple of potential possible sites, then for the county to go any further, dot, 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 would have to be addressed for evaluating the real feasibility, you know, the practical feasibility of those sites. Maybe just having a a little bit more specific recommendations about further analysis recommended might cover this whole discussion simply.
Doesn't C6 do that? Recommended steps for implementation of the program, including final selection and acquisition. So it sounds like
wrap up this discussion and say it's already covered.
If you feel that sentence covers it.
Well, I thought I took it pretty far down the road, maybe further than I thought it might actually. There'll be a lot of field work required on private property, right, in order to perform this properly. So the consultant will want to know what assistance from the county to help facilitate their work will be provided. I think that's going to be one of the first questions you get.
Back up in here. Application of information for C.
4C. What page?
Proposal format.
Are you saying 4C or C4? 4C.
4C.
Page 4?
Page 4.
Your
page 4.
Under proposal format?
Yeah.
Indication of information and participation.
Yeah. Indication of information and participation of proposal required.
Well, sure, but that just adds another step in the back and forth of evaluating the proposal. If you can tell them up front in here what you're going to do, you know, what is the county going to do?
Depends on what they need.
Well, I think you can imagine some things that they need. I just a suggestion. So you're going to get to that point.
Let's see a little bit more. I don't think it covers what we're talking about because what's in the proposal right now is all about implementation, not about recommended additional field work. Big, you know, that says, assuming it's feasible, here's what you have to do. But what if they identify, you know, we think these sites or this method have really high potential, but until you do this type of a test well or a PERC test or, you know, you do some additional field work, which is not going to be covered in this study. I mean, if the dollars available aren't including field work, they're not going to say you can implement anything. It's going to be, you need to answer this list of questions before you get to that list of how to implement an option. So there might be some clarification on that.
So part of what I'm hearing is a lot of concerns about, you know, the cartoon before the horse. Some of those could be addressed to this. I think it would go a long way to, in the language of it.
Yeah, I kind of agree. It's been a lot of the chicken or the egg going on, but the county went this direction, and here we are. But it's not to say that nothing else will ever be looked at. I think a good thing that would come out of these discussions is where you would recommend the board give staff direction to look next. And then also what comes out of the study, maybe more specifically.
I think there might be some real opportunities for cooperative work with the GS because their budget was flat. And so they're looking for, to visibility, is what I mean, come back into the political mainstream.
USGS?
US Geological Survey.
Yeah. We're actually meeting with them next week.
Good.
Well, that was a stream meeting.
Read this paper because it's a good summary of what can be done.
Courtney, how
On page 6, in the list of bullets, the fourth one says, will the water flow out of the area before it's extracted? Obviously, you're not going to test transmissivity rates for every sector of their basin. So isn't this going to have to be fairly focused into identifying some good potential sites and then answering this question?
I think that will be part of the process as they narrow it down, and anticipating that they utilize the model to narrow down their recommendations as far as maybe looking at some sites and then kind of weeding some out and then getting down to a few more that they focus on and use the model for as far as the information we have already about the basin characteristics.
Do we know flow rates now?
The model has them as part of their, as part of its layers. They have a
gross,
gross thing that you can use, and then you'll have to refine.
And that's sort of dry landing, or do piezoelectric pickups, or what?
Some of them are based, they're based on some regional transmissivity estimates that were done by Tom Tesla.
The model was originally built based on real pumping test data. And as much pumping test data as could be collected was built into the model. And then of course, one of the beauties of a model is that it comes back and says, this ain't working here. And so then you start tweaking things. And so it's based on real data that has been modified to allow the system to work. So, and then that comes back to what Bill was talking about, that there are gross assumptions. Now, to get to site-specific issues requires site-specific and detailed work. But that question can be answered in a relatively straightforward fashion.
I think there's a decision-making process that you go through. If you want surface spread, for instance, you go to the soils maps and find the most permeable soils with open profiles, and then start down from there.
Actually, I wasn't thinking in terms of perforating vertically so much as migrating out,
right.
Presumably west.
Yeah,
there is a gradient in the basin, and I remember, I'm not sure quite how you translate what's in the groundwater basin study to an actual quantitative loss from a specific site. I don't know that the study quite gets us there for specific sites, but I suppose it could be based on that foundation.
You can develop it from that, yeah.
And how much, in terms of cost, how much extra work would it be per site?
Well,
is it part of this process? Is it going to be something we can cover in the $250,000?
Well, it says limiting the three alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very doable. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think that's just the computer model, the way it's written. It's from the computer model for three, but then it says identify and analyze several.
But I think we need new data.
So,
I mean, if we're identifying a specific site.
Right. Well,
there's going to be lots from a site out there. Beyond
the sort of slow migration from east to west, in other words, there's loss from a specific
just
site.
Just a recharge mound underneath the site to extend beyond the site.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to be talking about controlling losses at a site because that's just not geologically feasible.
And that's why what I said was that it would be very advantageous to deal with the groundwater depression, because then all the water goes in, quote unquote, into the depression, and you have some identifiable responses associated with the surface, overlying surface interest.
Now the main depression, isn't that about 23, 24 miles from Polonio Pass? In other words, it's quite a bit farther from Polonio Pass than Shannon is, the main area that's depressed.
There's a couple of, There's several depressed areas, actually. The main one, there's one around Paso, and there's a couple of them.
I'm thinking of the one that's just east of Paso.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that part of the process in this beginning feasibility, in fact, I kind of see it as there's actually kind of a feasibility thing. I'd like to see something a little bit before that, where you identify, based on depressions and storage capacities, and who's going to use the water, what some of the different concept locations might be.
Mm-hmm.
And then, before you get to a feasibility thing where you're starting to calculate all the costs and all that, I kind of like to see conceptual projects as a beginning of this thing, so that you can have some idea of who the benefits would be
right.
to, and where the most obvious sites, obvious meaning the ones where you
sure.
see a depression, the ones where you see the high. Any evidence of real high permeability, extreme bends,
yeah.
you know, or areas where gravels are exposed.
I agree.
And those, once you develop those concepts, like for instance, if you want to help the communities with water supply, you focus definitely on a long pipeline and try and put it closer to the communities than necessarily putting it in up San Juan Creek, you know. So, but if you're saying, well, I don't know. I mean, it seems like you have to develop some of these concepts of where storage would, or sites where they have a specific benefit.
Right, and so we're talking about, as part of identifying possible specific projects, identifying specific beneficiaries, which goes to the question, should our process include some way of assessing interest of specific potential beneficiaries, or does that move us too far in the so-called political direction? I mean, if we start talking theoretically about potential beneficiaries who haven't been contacted, that's a political risk as well.
I would suggest that this would have to be, it would have to be something which would be floated and then addressed by the public in some way or another. I mean, we've been trying to do that, I think, a little bit already, just through the meeting that we've had.
I thought this was supposed to be a technical feasibility study.
I
thought this was engineering,
not... ...small life of this actual people,
social sciences
take
science.
A smaller piece of the 75,000 or whatever to do that kind of.
You mean
decision.
Before this proposal?
Yeah, and
project.
Then come have a second.
That's one possibility.
Dividing it into.
It doesn't sound like that's what the county wants to do, and
well,
it seems like
they're flexible.
It seems like I guess we're here to discuss the scope of work, and my suggestion would be, in front of the feasibility analysis, have a project concept review.
I guess my intention was to start with, like, under A, I guess I anticipated what would happen was they'd look at, okay, here's the past rules for groundwater basin. Okay, here's, you know, we could do all of these things. Well, we probably won't be able to do these things because of A, B, and C, and D. So, and we'll narrow down some more based on some other criteria. And then we're getting down into like maybe five or six and maybe looking at even more detail. And we get down to these three. We want to use the model and things to really get down to the nitty gritty and then start looking at, okay, well, what would this program look like? Well, if it works physically in this spot, then it's going to impact A, B, C, D. You know, depending on what method it is, if it's in lieu recharge, then there's got to be some local agency or farmer or whoever it is wanting to take that water in lieu of groundwater. So it kind of, that's kind of my vision. I don't know if it's going to happen, but the way I formatted this was, you know, having these bigger questions and then getting down to this final report, you know, conclusions or recommendations on the sites that have been most feasible.
My only concern is it sounded like there was a lot more detail that you want to flesh out, that you're asking for in this feasibility analysis.
So, is there some specific things in here that would you detail?
Well, to be feasibility, it means you cost them out. You kind of do a preliminary design. Maybe more kind of an economic analysis of who benefits and all that. I mean, whereas what I'm trying to say is, maybe initially, I mean, there's only a certain amount of people you can benefit, right? And there's only a certain amount of areas which are obviously available for storage. And just identify those, and you kind of create the concept of projects that then you do a feasibility analysis on those. Anyways, I can see that as a part of it. I certainly would work with the way you have it, but I think if you had something like that up front, then I think the questions that a lot of us have about, well, what are we doing here? Where are we going? At least those will be kind of focused towards a specific application of these banked water and groundwater.
Is it possible that when you sent this out, somehow it came back and answered these questions? And I don't know how. I don't know this kind of stuff. So I mean, would these automatically be answered or not? You know, sometimes you send an idea out there, everybody they bid on it, and then what they think they're returning. So you've spent $250,000 and you haven't. Not everybody's questions.
I think that's the danger of throwing too much of the politics that we've been talking about into it. I think we need to make sure that we concentrate on this as a feasibility study. Remember that we don't want to water down what we get with who's going to get it, who's going to benefit. We need to look at this as purely what it is. It's a physical study. The other questions need to be answered. I don't disagree, but let's not dilute what we're trying to do here. Otherwise, this isn't going to do us any good. We'll spend a bunch of money glossing over the surface without doing research. So I think that what you have here is pretty good. You just need to make sure that you explain to, and maybe I haven't read it all word for, but explain that it's a feasibility study as far as the physical characteristics. And I don't think that whoever's doing this should lose sight of it, kind of like I think we have maybe a little bit here. We need to make sure that physically does it work, does it not work?
Courtney, I think one way to implement some of what these two gentlemen have suggested, along with your overall vision narrative that you said, is to look at item 10, payment schedule. And what this will do, there's not a good correlation between, like, you're going to pay them 20% of their fee for preliminary engineering, but you really haven't defined and nailed down what is preliminary engineering. Same with progress report. So what you could do in here is expand this quite a bit and say, okay, here's what we expect as deliverables by the consultant, okay? Questions to be addressed, what have you, or just reference paragraph 9C1, or if you know if that's a shorter way to do it rather than repeat some of the things that you've already stated. Then there will be no ambiguity there. But I would also then say that there would need to be, I think you're anticipating a meeting after each phase, including with some of us in the meeting for feedback, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So you would have that as a deliverable participation in the meeting. And then in the next one, you would have implementation of comments or incorporation of comments in the next deliverable item. For example, when the progress report was issued, okay, and you're going to pay them another 30%, you're going to be up to 50% at that point, you're going to want to be sure that they've incorporated or at least addressed the comments that were made on the prior phase. And I think that's a way that maybe some little course corrections could be made as we go from one phase to another. Now, we're not going to be able to ask them for a course correction that takes them totally out of the scope. That's not fair. But I think within what we've been talking about, that's eminently out there. So anyway, that's one way to tie it together.
Yeah, I think there's a balance between being too, I've ran into this problem before, being too specific in the RFPs and too broad in the RFPs. So I was really trying to balance out getting these questions we have answered with allowing the consultant to bring in their expertise, and you know they're going to be presenting their proposal on how they're going to approach this, and then we'll be evaluating based on our, you know, what we envisioned.
Well, the tying into the money part is going to give you leverage. And I really think you need to be much more specific there, or they're going to say we're done with part one, and there's going to be a lot of dissatisfaction here without much leverage to get.
One possibility to incorporate it would be to ensure that in the proposal they need to identify what would be considered preliminary yield. Have them in their proposal tie everything to those four landmark buildings. And then you have a way of evaluating what they perceive as the issues and the problems and the deliverables.
The only thing with that is it makes it difficult to compare proposals. If somebody makes one assumption on one phase and somebody makes another assumption on another phase, how do you decide between firm A and firm B if they've got quite a bit different?
Usually when you're evaluating proposals, it's a matter of did they get the picture or not. Bottom line, I mean, I've read too many proposals.
Flexibility.
And, we get, after you've read through a stack of five or six of them, you know which consultants you even want to talk to and interview and which ones you don't.
Well, I hope we'll get several. It'll be good.
That's a good segue also in what you were saying before about number B, or letter B, under scope of work. I tried to come up with
stakeholder review meetings.
Yeah. So my idea was with the progress report being the kind of the most, the technical details, I was thinking that would be the best one to have them come review with this group and get into the technical details of what they're finding. And, have your input and maybe lead them in places that they hadn't looked at maybe. And then I was thinking with the final report, that's when, or not final report, the draft final report, that's when we not only have this group, but make sure we hit Shandon and the RAC and other agencies to get their input. I don't know if you agree with that concept. I was trying not to go to all of the county to all the different meetings for every land.
What duration will the draft final be out for review? Because I think from the standpoint of the RAC, the ideal would be if we could receive it in a brief oral report on it 1 month and then make our comments the next month. Would the schedule accommodate that?
And one of the things that they would have to have submitted is a schedule for doing the project and having it done by November 7th.
Right.
So they can make
that
more.
Important is we don't want them to bring us a report. Hand up a meeting and say, any questions?
Yeah. So I'll make that note to make sure that they can do that.
But if it could be circulated electronically or otherwise in advance of the meeting so that everybody had sufficient time to look at it.
The easiest thing for me would be to post it to our website.
Yeah, that would be good. But I think it's advantageous if there is a living person from the consultants to make a presentation 1 month and get some basic questions. If there are any basic misunderstandings, get those cleared up. And then let us think about it for a month, perhaps even designate a subcommittee to potentially write a RAC response or whatever. Come back and have the action meeting the following month after there's been time for reflection, perhaps email dialogue among ourselves, whatever.
Also, if they're going to have, if these reports are going to have any fold-out maps, 11 by 18 format, please ask them to do it in three sections, like three pieces we put together. Most of us don't have printers that handle 11 by 18 paper. I know we're just looking at this EIS for the ocean disposal alternative. There's
chunks of that.
Really good stuff that you can't print. I mean, I can't.
I can't even get it on the screen. And
we are going to put them on their website. At least make sure that they're accessible to the people that want to download them.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other side of the fiscal analysis, which I hope is clear to them, is that this is water that we have an entitlement to if we use it within the next 25 years. And then the water goes away if we don't.
It presumably goes away. I mean, the contracts get renegotiated, whatever they say.
Let's assume it goes away if we don't have a reasonable and beneficial use, which is the constitutional standard. We're only getting $12.50 an acre foot for this right now in the turnback pool, which means we're virtually giving it away. And we're paying for it, but we're giving it away. So, in terms of feasibility, this is a tremendous asset that we mustn't squander. So, just coming back and saying, well, if it looks expensive, let's don't do it.
And that is kind of the basic underlying purpose. But again, there's a difference between a general purpose and a specific purpose, naming beneficiaries. And that's
well,
kind of where,
but right now we're looking at hydrogeological questions. Who knows what beneficiaries will exist 20 years from now?
My question, I guess, then goes to, let's look at the very end of the process. It's November 2007. The technical work has been done. You were able to find some very good consultants who did exemplary work, and they found that this particular project, a specific project in a specific place, is physically feasible. Okay, this report goes to the Board of Supervisors. What other information would the Board of Supervisors need before they take whatever the next step is? And is there a way that that information can be in this report? If it isn't, where would they find it and what would they pay for it? That's kind of, you know, we kind of need to ask the question from the far end of the telescope before we know whether the scope of work answers our needs. So let's just assume, hypothetically, there's a feasible project defined in the final report, and the supervisors get the report. What do they need to do the next step?
Get the money.
No. DWR has a revolving loan program for recharge projects, so that there's that alternative, and presumably it could be part of the Prop 50 money is still probably going to be there, so there's an opportunity there, so that where it would be directed.
So it's technical work that could provide the foundation for a grant application.
Project to submit for a loan, or a low-cost loan, or whatever.
There's going to be some recommended next steps, too, in the final report, so that would give us some guidance, too, on how we would actually implement something, or what the things that we'd have to look at in order to implement something would be. And a lot of it would be public comment.
So I want to back up from the end of it. Who's on the selection committee?
It'll probably be county staff. We haven't selected anybody yet, but it'll most likely be county staff, probably one outside the department.
So it's all public works staff?
And someone outside our public works department.
So would you consider including some of the voices here that have not necessarily alternate views, but different perspectives that, you know, Bruce or Dan, Bill?
I can't speak to that. I'm not sure if it's allowed. I think it would probably be an internal, since it's a county-funded project, probably an internal selection committee.
Well, the idea is to keep this as little political as possible. It's basically an engineering study.
I was just thinking in terms of making sure that the request, because you can still negotiate that stuff when you're talking to these people or ask for certain things to be included, you know, that it'd be a broader group of expertise that we're making a decision about what the, you know, their proposal would include when they finally saw it. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know if it works like that. An RFP pretty much is a contract which we make with all applicants saying, this is what we're going to ask you to do. And
well,
based on that, they're going to come up with numbers. I don't think you negotiate a lot.
Well, don't you get to say, well, we don't want that, but we want this?
This is what we're doing right now.
But when it comes back to you, no matter what this says,
right,
what they've interpreted,
right,
is still going to be,
yeah,
Yeah, there's still some back.
We've done RFPs, and I'm telling you, when you get into the discussion, it's like, not for government.
Are you talking about transparency? Because there's a difference between having actual contractual voting power quasi staff if you're not staff. I think that would be legally awkward, but transparency as to how the decision is made.
Well, part of the discussion or something.
Well, I could suggest another way. The county could go to their procedures, Sue, and then they could select one preliminarily. This, in our opinion, the county staff, this is the one we want. Okay, to avoid any misunderstandings with this group, however, this group could review that proposal with no names on it, or select the people from this group to do that.
Yeah,
and give our comments to the city's reviewers for discussion in their normal course of their discussions with the consultant prior to the execution of the contract.
I wonder if maybe another alternative could be, I don't know, I'm speculating, I need to find out internally what the rules are, but maybe nominating a water resources professional to sit on the committee, maybe someone from the RAC or someone you might, you know, feel comfortable with that isn't evil internal county people.
Oh, no, I don't have this at all. I just said we're having a wide discussion here with really different perspectives, and I think it would be a shame for that not to get translated into when the expertise is here, and it would be so. I mean, I don't want to look at them before, but there are people who I think could contribute a lot.
As I understand,
they don't want to do that.
Whatever concerns are being brought up here have to somehow find a place in the percentages on page 4. And the first 60% refer to qualifications, which generally technical people judge. The part that we're discussing is primarily in the other 40%, understanding and of an approach to the project. And I think the question of purpose, beneficiaries, and things like that are issues that are coming up in our discussion. Summary of approach to be taken, I guess that's kind of where that would come to roost. And so the question then is the county's process amenable to at least as to that 25%.
I can't believe it wouldn't be.
You know, it's not unusual at all to have outsiders on the selection committee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not unusual at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easy enough to, I shouldn't say easy enough, it's one thing to ask employees of, say, other public agencies, such as Ken Weathers, or, to be a part of the selection committee. It's another thing to get a consultant, because then generally you need to pay that consultant to. But it's not unusual to have outsiders on selection committees at all. In fact, it's quite common and often quite useful.
Paul, wasn't that how the groundwater basin study was really handled all along, too? There was a technical advisory committee that participated in determining, which direction the contractor went, and it was a group of professionals that were really from outside the county.
I even remember as public, or maybe as North County Water Resources Forum, although we didn't take a vote, being asked whether to go with the same folks on phase 2. I remember that being discussed in public,
Well, but the phase 2 work was a public RFP and proposal, and companies proposed on it, and the formal selection process, like Courtney's describing, was gone through on both phases 1 and phase 2.
Mm-hmm.
And both phases, right, had outside people on the selection committee to select the consultant. someone from the Tascadero Mutual Water Company on phase one.
Yeah, I think Frank was involved, Frank Meacham.
Now the city of Paso Robles anteed up money to provide their outside consultant to work on those, you know, because they just wanted to make sure that, I don't know if I'm saying this correctly or politically correctly, but they wanted to make sure that their interests were represented, and so they ended up money in order to provide oversight. But that was somewhat of a different situation.
In general, you want your screening committee to be comprised of a balanced and technical range, and a lot of times you don't have that in-house. You know, a lot of organizations have one engineer, you know. You're reviewing a technical thing, you're going to ask another city engineer or other staff to come in and help because you want to have good judgment. You know, it's a pretty critical phase.
Yeah. And then once the study got going, like you said, Jen, there was a technical review committee, and that was comprised of 12 people. And that was a fairly large committee. But
in a broad cross-section of individuals as well.
Absolutely. It included Frank Meacham, the mayor of Paso Robles, and it included people from the Ag Department, Agricultural Commission. It included someone from the Grape Growers Group. It included a water well drilling contractor. It included a water resource professional that was being paid to participate in the group. And
the proposals that are turned in by various applicants, so those are all public documents. Mm-hmm. Yeah, by law they're public documents.
They aren't generally released. By the time they sit on the shelf for a number of years, then people can start looking at them. They aren't generally released.
Well, I don't know how you do it up here, but they're put in the library, they're put in the district office. People don't walk away with copies, but you can come in and look them over in advance.
So the RFPs?
The proposals that come from the RFPs. Mm-hmm.
I never got to see my competitors. I love your rules for that.
What you say is that the proposals are the property of the district and shall be kept regardless of whether they're accepted or not.
So I think what I'll do is I'll take back these suggestions and just let them know that there's a way that you guys want to be involved in the selection process. And these are some of the ideas that we came up with and what will work under the rules. And
I have a technical question going back to what this study is all about. Last night in Shannon, I was asked about the classic Shannon, separate basin from the Paso Robles basin. And there seemed to be at least some of these vessels out of the separate basin at some point in time. And that seemed to be important. Will this review answer that question, or at least go toward answering that question? Or do we already have that based on the Paso Robles basis?
Yeah, we already have.
Is the answer
popular in Shannon?
Yeah. What's the answer?
Yeah, what's the answer? I guess that would be my next question. So Shannon is part of the overall lake. There's not a physical change somewhere in the neighborhood of Garden Farms or something. Or in the back
garden.
No. Whitley Gardens.
No. Not in the opinion of the authors of the Paso
Robles.
And who else are you going to ask?
That question comes up at every single one of those.
Yes.
And you know, it's our opinion.
I was going to ask the question. I did my due diligence.
Now, you know. Your question, will it answer it? No, it won't answer the question whether they're separate basins or not. But the use of the model to answer the questions of where the water will go and what parts of the basin will benefit and how it will be benefited and impacts and so on, that will be answered.
And as part of that,
the way the county has put this together, that will be answered. And I, you know, my personal opinion is that the use of the model to demonstrate that those impacts will demonstrate, in fact, that it's not, you know, that it's not.
Well, except for built on the fact that it's not, then obviously the model's going to be demonstrated. But that aside, I mean, what you are going to do, some of the discussion has been, what if you put in the water in Shalom or Grand Shannon someplace, how long will it take to migrate away? And I guess that's one of the questions that would be answered through this review, would be how fast is that water moving through there? And that in itself, of course you start from A, you're going to wind up at A, but that in itself will tell you something about the impediments to water movement along the channel.
And the foundation is already there in the report, it just would need to be fleshed out specific to a project.
I think, you know, and I know this is kind of getting off on a tangent, but I think part of the reason I'll say misconception, you know, but is that I don't think for the most part people understand how slow water moves through a basin. And so there is a perception that perhaps they are separate basins, when in fact it's just simply a very, very, very slow movement of water. It does not move quickly through a basin. Especially like the Paso Robles Basin, which is so clay rich.
One of the ways you could show that, as Bill was talking about, being able to age that water to get an idea of how fast that water is moving.
It has to do with the past.
Or has it moved, I guess.
The other
how long it takes to move, I guess.
Well, I mean, you know,
just crossed my mind.
The other misconception is the idea that a model is a pair of blinders, that once you accept a model, that everything's going to be forced to fit the model. In reality, the data that you get may cause you to rethink some aspect of your model, because the data has to converge.
I think part of the misconception is those rooted that maybe we do too much modeling and not enough in the field testing, and I see a resistance even in this group to do any in the field testing. So I think that maybe people are distrusting of models because we only use those anymore.
Can I summarize real quick before we start staying on? I just wanted to let you know that I was going to do another draft of this and then just email it out to this group. So hopefully you put your names down on the sign in sheet. And so they really do need to get it out so we can keep on schedule. And then, you know, any email feedback you can give me and then get it on the street.
One quick thing.
Just
you have 60-40. 60% of the decision will be based on firm qualifications and 40 on understanding the approach to the project. I mean, said another way, firm qualifications are 50% more than the firms, or 50% more than their understanding and approach to the project. And I guess I would suggest that that's not quite appropriate for reasons. I think you said that it's not quite appropriate. You really want to know, have feedback on the proposal that the consultant that you're going to pick really understands the scope of the work and how they're going to implement it. So I suggest 50-50. Without upsetting the apple cart too much.
Yeah, I'm just noticing that it's 25% is the highest percentage of all the things, but I don't know, maybe that's...
But it's 25% of 40. That's the problem.
Yeah.
One of the rationalizations in my mind is that we're looking at the potential of cumulative restoring somewhere within the basin. 17,000 acre feet a year, so that over the potential lifetime of the project, you're talking about
Anyway, do we, I think we've answered most of the questions that we can today. If people have further thoughts on the RFP, they should send them to you.
Yes, definitely.
And you're good, you know, you can be, if I first you come out, you'll send some questions.
Yep. I appreciate all your input. That'd be real helpful.
Hope it wasn't too much.
I sure have, Karen, when you report that. I got all that money in cash, you paid all that family off.
Good for you.
What contribution of the two people have? $200.
No way! What are the friends?
Yeah.
Who are they?
The name is Jones. We bought that property and we went to the
That's why
I'm going to do it.
We were married 1 month, beautiful honeymoon down in the Indian Ocean, you know,